project, I would think we have to go on the negative side because it wouldn't create that. But some people would get into this project. So affordable housing has been the name, and indeed it's true to some extent as to what they're pursuing for some. But you've been pointing out continually, remarking as have I, about the bad process involved in this whole sorry history of the Dolphin Lee project.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly bad process. I mean, when when the city was asked about the Dolphin Lee project, because Tim Fitzmaurice and I believe Keith Sugar held a meeting down in the trailer last year in April or something, and Tim was asked if there was a Dolphin Lee project. There was a number of residents from both of those places at that meeting, and he said several times at that meeting there was no Dolphin Lee project.
And there was no literature in Spanish that described any such project, right?
Well, there was no. They weren't necessarily discussing it then. They were just trying to find out if people wanted a low-income mm-hmm. housing project.
Right.
But we had already found information about the Dolphin Lee project, and we knew that that was the project that they were heading towards.
You're not talking about rumors, you're talking about an actual document.
An actual document dated January of 99.
From Mercy Charity's house.
Right.
And of course, what happened was there was a series of meetings about the SCAN Housing Committee, and in the summer of July of 99, SCAN came out with a document that seemed to present a somewhat more balanced perspective, suggesting the Dolphin Lee, among a bunch of other projects, not just the Dolphin Lee, might be considered by the city council for an affordable housing project.
Right, but what the city council then did is just look at the SCAN endorsement of Dolphin Lee and say, well, this is one of the things they endorse, so we'll do it.
Right, and this actually was done, I think, in a rather deceptive way, because it was done a full week after the public comment period had happened. We have an incoming call. Let's get our own public comment. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I have a comment to add to what you're talking about.
Go ahead.
The scare tactic that Tim Fitzmaurice used with the residents to say that, you know, if you don't take this money and leave now, maybe somebody else later on will come along and you'll have to leave without this money. Well, it seems to me that the owners of these buildings care very much about their tenants. And I don't believe that these owners would sell without a provision for their tenants. I've never heard landlords go to bat to their tenants like these, at least in one building.
Well, now be advised that the landlords have never shown up at any of these meetings, except McElroy did show up at the last meeting, and his appearance made me very nervous because he talked about wanting to sell this project to the city, and why don't people jump on this project, and it's a great idea, and why are you scaring people away from this project? So it was a rather shocking eye-opener to me that one of the landlords was so hot to sell the property to the city, and he was actually very much aghast that the tenants were opposing it. The other landlord, and I know I haven't talked about this before on the air because this is new information to me, and I got this on Tuesday evening at this tenant advisory committee meeting and talking to Terry McElroy, who's the owner of the Dolphin, afterward. I'd spoken to him once before about 7 months ago when he was skeptical of the city council's project, but this time he seemed to be gung-ho because this is one of my worries. I'm afraid he does want to sell this project. He did state, however, and it's hard to tell because, you know, I only have this one encounter with him. He said he would go on the air with us, but he has not, he called back the next day getting, radio shy, mic shy, and has not yet agreed to do that. So, I think it's really important that we get some sense of what's going on. And one of the things I pose to other activists, because I think if we really are concerned with these tenants, we do have to protect them from the depredations of the RDA, Redevelopment Agency, and the city. And I think we're beginning to do that. I mean, I think we have reached a point where we haven't won yet, certainly, but we have a point where we can stand up and start mobilizing community sentiment in a much more thoroughgoing way than we've done so far, with marches, with tent cities if necessary. Why not, camp on Canfield's property? That's a great place to set up a tent city.
Yeah.
But we also have to be advised that some of the concerns that Fitzmaurice raises, though soundingly they may be opportunistic, they may be alarmist, they may be based, you know, simply to justify a project that he is really just blindly committed to, are not entirely without substance. There is a concern that, you know, you get some guy who's a landlord, he may sell the property. And what we need, of course, are protections from the city on that kind of situation, as or perhaps,
well, right.
You know.
Wasn't one of the granddaughter of the Lee?
Nina Ruiz.
Wasn't she saying she wanted guarantees for her people that they would be able to get in? She was concerned about that.
She definitely is, but as I think Tim Fitzmaurice has the same misimpression, and so did Keith Sugar have the same misimpression. She is not in any way. She isn't even a blood relative of the owner. She's the daughter of, I think, you know, someone who was once connected by marriage with the owner. She's simply a resident. She is a tenant who's fighting for the rights of the tenants. And so this is important to understand. I mean, we have, you know, we frequently said, you know, lacking information otherwise, I've given the landlords the benefit of the doubt, which isn't always the best thing to do, by the way, landlords being landlords.
Yes.
Let's ask Scott, shill for the landlords, what he thinks about all this. Is there more you want to say on this?
No, that's fine. I'm going to continue listening, though.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
What do you say, Scott? Should we be jumping on the Fitzmaurice train, and what's the solution to the situation?
Well, I mean, basically, I agree that there may be a concern there, but this concern could have been done away with by the city council months and months and months ago. But they chose to ignore what the tenants' demands. They chose to ignore the letter from the Lee family attorney that had three demands on it, two of which pertained to the tenants.
They asked for relocation and eligibility guarantees.
And
essentially saying that everybody gets kicked out, gets back in, and everybody gets to be paid the necessary rent while they're, you know, waiting for the project to be built.
And early on, they ignored people like myself and you and Phil Bear, who were calling for something that involved the tenants in a real way in this whole process.
Such as a project area committee.
Or just, you know, something where somehow they were empowered to have real involvement in every phase of this project.
And the reality, of course, is that you can never get cities and governments to do this, that tenants have to do it themselves, and in essence, that's what they have begun to do.
Right, yeah.
But the question is, now that they are beginning to do it, and they're having these meetings, and I remind people that Residentes Unidos, which looks like the most up-and-coming kick-ass rent group in town, renters in town, I should say, meets every Friday night at 7 o'clock at 124 Lee Brandt Street. What can they do to make sure that they don't get shafted from the other side, the landlord side?
Well, I think, you know, it's really the ball is still in the city's court. The city, Tim is using this as a smokescreen to draw attention away from himself. You know, it's just like the Wizard of Oz. Don't look at the guy behind the curtain, you know. Look over here. Don't look at us, you know. And, because, I mean, if they could successfully make that argument to enough people, people would look at the landlords and say, oh, we got to go, you know, but then they would drop their guard on what the city's doing, and the city would just slime its way along and continue this process unabated.
In fact, there have some have said, since the city can't get the information from the Lee tenants, so they were able successfully to get it from the Dolphin as to family size and income, I assume, as well. They were interviewed by this out-of-town L.A. relocation team that came up and tried also. I guess they entered the Dolphin property on a different day than they were permitted to and talked to people going around the back of the manager. And something similar was tried on the Lee property, but the Lee forbade them from entering the property. And there was a similar deal with one of the city employees, Veronica Lopez, who came onto the Lee property in violation of agreements that she had with the. Well, I guess it was this point. It was Residente Unidos said, "Stay away from our area," and she claimed she'd been told she could, and various residents said, "No, you haven't been able to." But the point is, since they've had all this information, from the Dolphin. They can move on the Dolphin, but they can't move on the Lee because they don't have the information, and also they have no replacement housing plan voted by the Relocation Advisory Committee, which is a precursor, as I understand it, although I'm not a legal expert, to any purchase offer on the either property. Are they stymied?
Well, they could be if they're going to start some sort of real process here. But if they want to, they can approve the existing replacement housing plan.
This is a plan that provides 48 units, only 34 of which are family units, for 70 to 100 families. Is that correct?
Right.
So in essence, it almost necessarily means that a number of people won't get in.
Well, either that or they'll have two families per unit, which is one of the reasons they cite for doing this project in the first place.
Overcrowding.
Right. Too many families per unit.
Would they be willing to proceed in the face of a scan resolution, in the face of tenants unanimously saying no, in the face of their own appointed relocation advisory committee unanimously saying no?
Well, it seems like they're a pretty arrogant lot. So there's always that possibility that they will just, you know, thumb their noses at the general community and the community in those two apartments in particular and just continue ahead with this project.
And they're such lofty noses, we must say.
Yeah.
Well, I know that Keith Sugar kept assuring everybody as mayor last night, although what a mayor who's a non-SCAN member is doing, and with that relatively, and we read his speech, not particularly responsive kind of, I mean, I didn't play you what Ruiz said. Ruiz went through a number of the specifics that you hear on the show about the reasons that the tenants objected. They objected to Mercy Charities Housing as a developer and as a manager and as an owner of the property. They objected to lack of units. They objected to lack of the public process. They objected to the way they were treated. They felt that it was a bad project because it was destroying existing housing. They had all kinds of things. One didn't hear any really specific responses by the mayor on any of those points. And part of that, I think, is because he's not really... I mean, they had the experts over off to the side. Elizabeth Vogel was there. Presumably, if there was going to be a real rebuttal, she could have gotten up and said, well, this isn't true, or this is partially true, or whatever. But, of course, none of that happened. Instead, we had, I guess, at the SCAN meeting last night where this Dolphin Lee demolition project was stopped by essentially a 2-to-1 vote until there's a forum held, until there's a consensus built, until there are relocation and return guarantees voted by the redevelopment agency. We had people like Bernice Belton and Sandy Silver, who are advocates of the project, kind of seizing the mic and in a fashion that many have accused me of doing, and I don't do that usually because I'm real wary of that. But, I mean, I think I have a reputation for that, which I don't think is particularly deserved. It would be nice if I were more bold in that regard. Usually if I get up to the mic, I'll keep talking, even if they cut it off until I finish my 3 minutes. But they seized the mic, and they began, you know, defending the project. What did you make of that?
Well, they were doing exactly what they were accusing you and Phil and supposedly me of doing. Was just lies and innuendo because none of them said anything of substance. Elizabeth Vogel said we'll never have consensus on low-income housing, and Bernice, you know, went into this whole long speech about how personal attacks were never part of her.
And then proceeded to denounce this as a Robert North Phil Bear production. I remember, yeah, that was Bernice kind of, I think. What's that?
Also made some very rude comments about Nena.
Right, and Nena Ruiz, you know, was trashed as some sort of landlord stooge. Well, eventually, I mean, we can get past all this because the membership, you know, to their credit, listened to the arguments and voted in favor of the halt. And I guess, you know, that certainly is good. And the question is, what are the next steps that the community needs to take and the tenants need to take to be, you know, to make sure that, and I think this is the issue. The issue really is affordable housing. How can we get affordable housing in Santa Cruz? What's the next step here?
Well, the next step is to, as far as any project in the Beach Flats, if there's going to be a project to help the people that currently live at the Dolphin and the Lee, the next step is to start something where they're in charge, where they're making the decisions, not only the, about location of the project, you know, every decision has to be revisited by them. Mm-hmm. You know, site location, whether or not relocation should be a consideration, or can you save enough money by not relocating to actually be able to rehab the current building.
But how would Cecil Cirillo earn her $100,000 plus a year salary if that happened?
Well, if you built a project...
She's ahead of the redevelopment agency.
If you built a project on another site and then moved all the people to this other site on vacant land in Beach Flats or somewhere else in town, for
wouldn't
that matter...
Wouldn't that interfere with Charlie Canfield's parking lots?
Well, there's residential land, though. It's not parking... It's not zoned as commercial parking.
But doesn't he need to use that as parking lots in the summer?
Don't you know he makes so much money off that they can't afford the land?
Well, actually, it always has been rumored that the boardwalk makes more money off of parking than they do off the actual amusement park.
It's not just a rumor. It's what Mayor Sugar told us last night. He pointed out that the assessment value of the... residentially zoned but apparently illegally used property by Canfield for parking in the, you know, is significantly higher, perhaps 100% higher, he wasn't sure of the figures, than how they would assess the Dolphin and Lee property. And I said, so this is the reason that even though the Dolphin and Lee has a building on it, and you would think it would be assessed as more, it also cost more to destroy that building if you need to, as an additional cost, you're claiming that it will be much more expensive to get Canfield's property. He said, yes. I said, have you ever seen a study done of this? I didn't get an answer to that. Maybe Mayor Sugar will give us an answer later.
Well,
not.
The one thing about that argument, though, is that because the property zoned residential, if Canfield was to sell it to somebody else, they couldn't use it as a parking lot because the parking lot is non-conforming use to the zoning designation. Mm-hmm. And so only if Canfield got a permit back in the 60s or something or whenever from the city to use it as a parking lot.
Did he? Do we know?
I don't know. But
incoming phone call, looks like.
But if Canfield has a permit to use that property as parking and he goes and sells the property, the permit doesn't go with it, neither does the non-conforming use. It's still zoned residential, so the new owner would have to use it as residential property.
Except that Mayor Sugar says that an appraiser has the right to appraise it as a parking lot, even if it's an illegal one.
Well, I don't know.
That's how much they'd have to pay
for
it.
Here we go. We got an incoming caller here. Caller, thank you for waiting.
Hi, Bernard. You're one of those activists who's been signing people up on the streets against the Dolphin Lee demolition.
Yeah.
So you're hardly an advocate for Mayor Sugar.
No, but I wanted to really do a couple of pieces of substance here, especially on the appraisal. I talked to, you know, a certified public accountant today about how the appraisal process works. Mm-hmm. And I told him the situation, you know, about valuing at the highest use. And I said, you know, what happens if it's just residential zoning? Can you value it as a parking lot? And the guy said, absolutely not.
You mean Mayor Sugar was either wrong or lying to us?
Well, I don't know about lying, but I think Mayor Sugar is going to really have to do his homework on that, and I think he's going to have to produce us some appraisals. We should demand those appraisals.
Right.
We really need to move on that. You know, because I think there's a contradiction, and we need to see that.
You yourself, of course, are a certified public accountant.
No, I'm not. I'm an enrolled agent.
You're a who?
An enrolled agent.
Which is, you are in a public accountant.
Right. I'm licensed by the Internal Revenue Service to represent the public.
I see. So you do have some expertise in that area.
I don't have an expertise when making an appraisal. No, I'm not.
But you did approach an appraiser who does have expertise.
I approached a CPA that knows about appraising,
mm-hmm.
You know, and he gave me his opinion. And I'm going to ask a few other people yet, too.
Good.
So I get some second and third opinions on that from some. I'm going to ask another CPA tomorrow that is an appraiser.
Excellent.
I'll see what happens.
Well, again, I may be too eager to jump on poor Mayor Sugar, but perhaps not.
Let's just stick to the issues.
Uh-huh.
Another thing that really gets me about Mayor Sugar's sincerity is that last night when he talked at SCAN, he framed the debate again. It's all or nothing, and that's the problem. He's not recognizing, you know, the residents saying for a different project. That's where we need to center him on, in my opinion.
Right. It's not that we don't want any project. It's
right.
That we want a project which really responds to the needs of the tenants.
That's right. And we've got to get him start acknowledging them.
And it seems to me that's also the way, and I'm cribbing from Scott here in a conversation we had last night, that's the way to make sure that somebody like McElroy doesn't run off and sell it to a salmon factory and or whatever, because McElroy prefers to sell to the city if he can. And if we can get the city back on track doing the right kind of project, which really responds to the needs of the tenants, then McElroy will be happy, sell to the city. The city can, hopefully enter into some kind of a land trust agreement or some other kind of an arrangement that actually gives the tenants real power and control over the property and over what's going on. And there can be a situation where everyone is protected.
To Mayor Chigger's credit, when I asked him a question, what do you think about a land trust possibility? He said, I'm open to it.
Right. Well, frankly, anything Mayor Chigger says at this point has to be backed up by action, or I find myself wondering where to go get a cookie.
I agree, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say bye-bye right now.
Thank you, Bernard.
Bye-bye.
That's Bernard, Bernard Klitzner, has become increasingly articulate, well-spoken, and is bringing up new information to this discussion. I want to thank you, Bernard, for that. Let's listen to an old familiar voice, that of Mayor Keith Chigger, and perhaps that of an even older voice, Roxana Kistapache. We're going to join the two of them in a debate, discussion, exchange that was happening outside. That's after we get this next phone call, outside the SCAN meeting.
You're on free radio? Yes, you are. This sounds like Nena Ruiz to me.
Well, you're close.
Ah, it's her mom.
That's right. One generation up.
Okay, so you are the sinister manager of the Lee Apartments.
That's correct.
You are the daughter of the salmon factory slumlord Vernon Lee?
No, the filthy salmon.
Oh, filthy salmon factory. Yes, I'm sorry. I forgot. Packed in like salmons, filthy and squalid. How does it feel running such an operation?
We're used to it. We've been doing it for so many years now.
So you become secondhand at it.
I guess so.
So have you been listening?
I just came back from there, as a matter of fact. I went down to check on Martha. She lives in one of our apartments, and one of her grandchildren were killed, shot the other night, Saturday night.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And she was one of course, the tenants who came to the meeting at SCAN last night, one of the five tenants that sat through the hurricane turmoil and tumult of the back and forth, which you guys, I must say, emerged, I think, victorious from.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Have you been listening to our show at all? Or?
For about 10 minutes.
Any thoughts about what happened last night?
Well, I got together with the people who were at that meeting last night just to check on them and see how they were feeling. And, of course, Martha's going through her own tragedy. And I have to say that woman's very dedicated because she went to Wednesday night's meeting and she went to last Tuesday's night.
Now, how much did you pay her? Did you pressure her with eviction to get her to go to are you giving her a splendid new apartment and agreeing to clean up some of the rats, the dead rats that are littering the floor of the...
Her heart's really in there and her time, it's her time right now. It's time for her to... be the center of attention down there.
Now, I understand that there is a collection being taken up for the funerals of these three men who were shot on Saturday night.
That's true, and I was told while I was down there, I arranged for her to get a ride to the church because they're doing something tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an individual, a brother of one of the people who died, and right now the biggest concern is to get food made on Tuesday after the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
That they're having here. So I've been calling some people. That's why I didn't call you sooner, to see if some ladies I know could make some pots of food.
Are you looking for volunteers? I mean, we could certainly put out the appeal to folks to give you a call if they want to help out.
That would be wonderful.
What number can they call you at, Julie?
471-9099.
471-9099. You can call Julie Costanza Gomez, who's organizing a funeral for... do you know the names of these three men?
I do not. I don't have them in front of me. The young boy who, the youngest one that was killed, had not lived at our apartments very long.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the 17-year-old.
I see.
He doesn't have the same last name as his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it doesn't ring a bell for me.
Well, again, the number for helping with this situation is 471-9099. Getting back to the other matter of for me, it's what happened last night, and also what's next. I understand the Sentinel has been talking to you, and you're hopeful that there'll be some kind of a story tomorrow in the paper?
I was told there will be.
Mm-hmm.
They actually talked to some of the residents tonight to see how they're doing about this, and I think that if I got to pick the topic for this article,
mm-hmm.
it would be racist versus ethnocentric.
And clarify a little bit for us what I guess this is your perspective on what happened last night.
Mm-hmm. Was he being racist? I'm talking about Kate Sugar, the way he spoke to they're not only our tenants, they're not only our customers, but they're also our friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way he spoke to them and about them in a group of people that are different from them.
It was kind of a bullying approach, I thought.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really become his style. He's adopted this bullying style. Well, if you want to live in these squalid conditions, go ahead. We'll let you. As though, you know, you're either going to take, you know, our little Disneyland proposal, or else, you know, we're just going to leave you and goodbye.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
It was really ugly, and the people were affected. They felt just hurt in their eyes as they were talking to me about it. And so, I don't know. I'm in a way, you know, I'm an American citizen, and I, in fact, I am, you know, Italian and American Indian,
mm-hmm.
and I speak fluent Spanish, and I've, you know, incorporated the Mexican culture into my life. My children are half Mexican and you know, and half what I am. And so I must say I was embarrassed for the way he treated them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact, you know, they came here to live a better life and to get support that they couldn't get in their own country. And then this man comes and says this stuff to them in the fashion that he said it in front of all those people and humiliated them.
You know, I wish I had a copy of the tape to play, and perhaps I will by next Thursday when the show returns from 6 to 8.
Well, I have a copy of it.
I think, yeah, well, perhaps we can get it from you. What I'd like to do, Julie, if I can, is play a little of the conversation that happened outside with Mayor Sugar. Would you like to hear that?
Yeah, I would.
Why don't we do that, and then if you have some more thoughts, you can call back in.
Okay.
Thank you.
So here we go, and it's Mayor Sugar talking to us outside, obviously somewhat flummoxed about what he had done, because I think he realized that he had fucked up politically, certainly. You know, that certainly was true. And I think he also probably felt he was on the losing side of an issue that he suddenly wanted to shift over to. I mean, I want to note that Fitzmaurice, I don't know if you want to say it's to his credit, in a certain sense it is, he didn't change around on his opinion when everybody else started changing. I mean, he stayed with, I think it was a losing position and the wrong position, but there was a certain consistency and integrity to it. Whereas Keith Sugar suddenly jumps up and says, oh, I've been against this all along. And why do I smell opportunism here? I mean, am I being too cynical? What do you think?
Well, I think that... if Keith had been against this all along, his votes and as the council sitting as the redevelopment agency don't prove that out. And as soon as he starts voting that way,
he always voted in favor of it.
Right.
He always voted in favor.
As soon as he starts voting what he's now currently talking, once the walk and the talk are the same, then we'll see, you know. But so far, the votes don't prove that out.
Right, and that made much of this conversation that we're about to hear kind of irrelevant, because as far as I'm concerned, he's a talking head until he takes some action. And I told him what he's going to need to do. He wanted to go see the residents on Friday and, you know, apologize and all that sort of thing. I said, apologies don't mean anything when you're talking about destroying people's homes. And also, after the kind of endless, he didn't just bully them on this one occasion, you bullied their advocates repeatedly at City Council for the last 9 months. And, you know, the idea that you suddenly have decided to have a quick change of heart is not credible unless you can really, you know, acknowledge all those past incidents, and one can see that you really have changed your mind on that. And maybe one has to say in the ultimate analysis, politicians don't really change their minds. They just change the way their asses are facing because the people are making them do that. But let's hear Keith. I'll shut up. Let's hear what he has to say.
Take you at your word.
Yeah. It's just so hard because no one's being respectful, kind.
On either side.
But it doesn't matter. I don't hold an office. Those people don't hold offices. They're just people who are going to be totally affected by your actions.
Outside the scam meeting.
But as an officer of the city, I think you have a responsibility to set the tone. And Keith, you can't do it. Yeah. I don't know anybody that has a worse temper than me, but you.
No, and I lost money today, and that was
you
inappropriate.
You lose every time.
No. I will defend myself here and
okay,
say.
Okay, every
and
other
say,
time.
I kind of lost my temper a little bit here, and I really regret it. The fact of the matter is that there is no way in hell I'm going to let this thing go forward if we can't give the same guarantees that you guys are saying you want, or that the tenants are saying they want. There is no way in hell.
It just seems like...
Okay, let me finish. The thing is, you've got to give me time to put it together. But with everybody accusing everybody of some sinister agenda, you know what happens? The process breaks down. And
Why are you guys having the meetings then if you're not ready to go ahead?
We're not ready to go ahead.
Well, they've been trying to pass that replacement housing plan, like crazy. Take offers on the property
and close session.
Yeah, come
no,
on.
I'm voting. I will vote against.
But you're two votes. There are five other votes on the council. See, that's the point. And the key question is whether will you bring up the issue of the redevelopment agency? If you bring it up publicly and say, I want those guarantees before we proceed, not necessarily in terms of the specific contracts with the particular place you're going to go to, but you bring it up as an issue of clear principle.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a majority.
I've been trying to do that.
Well, what's the problem with the statement of principle? Could have been brought 3 months ago. I don't understand. Why
I've been saying this for almost a year, Robert.
Well, we haven't heard it.
Well, Scott, let's interrupt this interesting discussion. He's been trying to do that. Has he forgotten how to write? Does he not have a secretary that can type two lines for a resolution for the redevelopment agency? What can he mean when he says he's trying to do that?
I'm not sure what he really means. He's alluding to some abstract things that he thinks he's doing to aid the process in this project, but... what he needs to do is to write a binding resolution. Maybe he should sit down with a city attorney, Keystone attorney, and Reed Chance, the attorney for the Lee property, and come up with a resolution that they all agree upon, and will the tenant, most importantly, that the tenants agree upon, and pass that as the redevelopment agency, a binding resolution that...
It seems pretty straightforward, and it also seems that since the tenants are asking, I think what they ultimately want, of course, is a series of individual contracts with each tenant there, and then the city is using this as an excuse to run around and ask for the names of every tenant, their income, where they live, who their mother was involved with, et cetera, et cetera. But, of course, that information once given would allow the city to proceed without the permission of the tenants because they could then form a replacement housing plan and then work through eminent domain. At least that's the fear that a lot of us have.
Now, well, I mean, if they wanted to get even sleazier, they could just have the cops videotape all the units for a number of weeks and estimate how many people live there and just go from that information.
Right. Well, I mean, they can do all this... You know, what I'm saying is I don't think the tenants necessarily are asking right now for a lot of detailed, specific, my name on the contract guarantees for everybody, but they want a general binding commitment that has some legal force for everybody that is passed by the redevelopment agency. And we know that though we have, and you've heard me, every 2 weeks I stand up and ask for that, and every 2 weeks one doesn't hear any response from the redevelopment agency. Mayor Sugar doesn't say, you know, Robert, I agree with you completely. You're right. I'm going to do it tomorrow. Or alternately, there's no need to do that because it's guaranteed by laws A, B, C, D, E, and F. So you don't hear anything. And what we're going to hear now is more of Mayor Sugar talking outside with, after his defeat inside, conversations outside. Is this political schmooze? Is there a change of heart by Mayor Sugar?
Did you pay attention to the way he voted on that issue when it came time for the actual vote?
I assumed Sugar is not a SCAN member. He cannot vote.
I thought he was a SCAN member.
No.
Oh, he's not?
I'm told he wasn't.
Huh. Well, then why was he allowed to talk?
Why indeed?
Yeah,
why indeed?
Yeah, but I mean the city. Right. The city.
Right.
I mean,
right. Well, I know that. I called Christopher Crone to ask him. By the way, before the show started, I called Christopher Crone, told him the show was happening. He knows it's on. He obviously, maybe he's been unable to get through. But the lines have been open a lot of the time, and I presume he has chosen not to get through. Similarly with Tim Fitzmaurice. By mistake, I called Tim Fitzmaurice's number. I didn't think Tim, who hasn't called into this show in many a moon, I think he was on one show several months back, he was quite civil and polite, and I told him there was a show and that he should listen in and call in. And Tim, you're welcome to call in if you think we're misrepresenting you, or if you want to comment on anything that's said, you are welcome to call in. Naturally, we're not a friendly audience in the sense of agreeing with you or having much regard for the current situation, but you have your chance to speak. Let's hear more from Sugar.
No, saying it is one thing, but doing it at the redevelopment agency, why don't you do it? Why not do it? Why not pass the resolution?
I will pass the resolution when I can make those guarantees in good faith. I can't make those guarantees in good faith right now because we don't have the replacement housing set up yet. I haven't received the final criteria. Oh, hold on a second. I haven't received the final criteria for Mercy yet. You know, I've been the one that's been trying to get Mercy to abandon their restrictive criteria. And I'm getting them to really back down on a lot of that. It takes time. That's all I'm saying. But with the acrimony and the accusations that everybody raises, you know, people dig in their heels. People dig in their heels.
That's what you made the residents do.
What about that, Scott? He says he needs time, he needs a number of things before he can go to the redevelopment agency with those resolutions. He is the part of the redevelopment agency, the city council is the redevelopment agency. But what do you think of his argument?
Well, and then he also says that he has to be able to make those things in good faith, and he's not able to do that yet, which contradicts the letter that he and Elizabeth Vogel, supposedly notarized letter that he and Elizabeth Vogel sent to all the residents of the Dolphin and the Lee, giving all these guarantees.
So in other words, you're saying that, and I recall that letter, we kind of dismissed it saying that the letter doesn't have any legal validity, that he needs to get a resolution from the redevelopment agency, but he did state that there would be no... Immigration would not be a status, would not be a consideration in relocation, and also that eligibility requirements would not be a problem. I don't recall the exact specifics, but it was reassurances to the tenants. So, but he's saying that he can't go back for this general resolution until he has everything sewed up with I's dotted and T's crossed. Frankly, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know redevelopment law. I don't feel very trusting of that statement.
Me either. I think that he's just trying to hoodwink us.
Hang on here. Hi, you're on the air with Free Radio.
Yeah, you're missing a key point. That letter that was signed by Keith Sugar and Elizabeth Vogel only guaranteed first preference.
Right.
And
of course is not guaranteed return to the project. It's,
right.
It just means that they will look you over before throwing out your application first.
Yeah. So I mean, they could guarantee first preference. We've understood that for a long time, mm-hmm. And so do the tenants. The tenants want something that they know will assure them a house.
Well, Becky Johnson, you let's admit that's who you are. I recognize your voice.
Ha ha. Caught me.
Yes, indeed. You were at this SCAN meeting. You were videoing the whole thing. You actually videoed a previous meeting of the Relocation Advisory Committee, and
That's
you were present
correct.
At the SCAN Housing Committee earlier yesterday. Do you have any general comments to make about what happened and what you've heard so far from what Keith Sugar has been saying?
Well, I've been really happy with the votes. The SCAN general meeting, they voted 30-18
to direct City Council to give the relocation the guarantees that the tenants are asking for and to rewrite the plan so that there's sufficient housing for the people and to put the project on hold. SCAM's also going to be planning a forum, I understand.
Right.
And I also understood as I was walking away, Skip Spitzer told me that, oh, it's up to the housing subcommittee to decide when and where that forum is going to be. So he asked me when it was going to be because I'm on that.
That sounds like the way they treated the sleeping ban, essentially do as little as possible and let somebody else take care of it.
So I'm not sure how that's going to come about, but watch this spot.
Should we continue with the tape, or is there more you want
to say?
Yeah,
go for it.
Okay.
Why you have such a strong group.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even feel acrimonious anymore. I don't even feel like you guys are part of the negotiation.
Well, Roxanne, because you have absolutely no faith in us.
No, right? I don't. I'm saying I don't have any acrimony anymore. I have so much faith in those tenants and the way they, you know, pulled themselves together that I don't feel like you're going to be able to do them dirty like it started out.
Hold on. I have complete faith in the tenants, too. I have enough faith in the tenants so that if they don't want this project, I'm going to listen to them, and there's no project.
But what they want is a new project.
Yeah, that's what they said. They're involved in right from the beginning.
Yeah.
They don't want to be spoon-fed somebody else's plans.
I completely agree.
Have you seen the list of demands that the tenants themselves signed? Not the Vernon Lee letter, but the list of demands the tenants...
I'm pretty sure I've seen it. I've seen the Lee letter.
Every unit from the Lee and the Dolphin have signed
out. Replaced. Oh, okay. Yeah.
What they want is they want you to put out an RFP on this project. Yeah. They don't want Mercy to be the sole source.
Okay, let me address that. That's the one area where we're really disagreeing, is who. Okay, is it going to be Mercy? Well, hold on a second, Scott. I respect the arguments that Mercy shouldn't be here. We're already down the road with Mercy, okay? Yeah. If we were way down the line, perhaps I could reconsider that. We're way down the line with Mercy. The question is, what kind of a project are we going to get? Are we going to...
Let's pause here. How far down the line are we with Mercy, Scott?
Well, this project is starting out as a $12 million or $12.5 million project. So far they've given Mercy, I believe it was $67,000, and maybe at some other point they gave them $40,000 or something. So there might be $100,000 already into this project, but we aren't way down the line with it. Mercy designed this project years and years and years ago. So the actual project, the idea of this project, isn't something new. It's something from the early to mid 90s, and so there isn't a lot of investment in time currently in this project, except the redevelopment agency also hired this out of town relocation expert, Biff, I believe his name is.
No, he means Scott likes to call him Biff Nordstrom, but his real name is Michael Baietti.
Right.
Mickey and Mecky.
We'll kick them out for you, Incorporated.
But they guarantee 100% the success. They guarantee satisfaction.
Well, is this success for the developer or success for the residents?
Well, it certainly doesn't seem to be success for Keith Sugar in even reading the two key letters that were sent to him months ago, at least 2 months ago, which, you know, he obviously isn't familiar with. You can hear him floundering. He just doesn't know what those letters were. He doesn't know what they said. He isn't addressing them. Because, and I think this is the key point, people in positions of power don't take any of this stuff seriously until it's rammed right down their throat and possibly all the way up their ass. It's amazing. I mean, Bernice Belton wouldn't trouble herself to come to a housing committee meeting, and then she expects to run the show when she gets to the SCAN general meeting. It's amazing. You know, and then she complains that there aren't other spokespeople involved. Well, the issue is debated at length in one housing committee meeting after another, and yet these people in positions of power didn't even bother to lift their fingers to respond to the arguments. So persuaded were they that their power was secure that they didn't have to give reasonable answers to these reasonable questions. Am I just blowing smoke here?
No, that's exactly what happened. They had an opportunity because everybody was granted 40 or 45 seconds to speak, and they had opportunities to make arguments in favor of the project, you know, solid arguments that had were full of facts, and not a single one of them took that opportunity. They all took the opportunity to blast the other side.
Yeah, you were
or to blast the tenants themselves.
Right, the tenants are landlord tools. This is a project of a couple of crazy, abusive, controlling, evil activists. Like I guess you weren't mentioned, but Phil and I, we got coverage.
Well, you were mentioned twice. Sandy Silver mentioned the two of you, and Bernice Belton mentioned the two of you.
But now we have the soft sell from Keith Sugar. Let's continue analyzing him statement by statement.
Project that the tenants want. I don't care if it's Mercy or Captain Kangaroo that's doing the project.
Because everything you're saying, I'm sorry, they are telling you what they want. You're saying if they don't want.